This is a special showcase episode of the Round Table Podcast. 20 minutes with Mer Lafferty. Hello, literary alchemists. I'm Dave Robison.
And I'm Brian Humphrey.
And you're listening to a special showcase episode of the Roundtable Podcast, 20 Minutes With.
20 Minutes With is a segment in which Dave and I have the great honor to share the microphone with some fabulously talented people. And holy crap, today. Dave.
Yes, yes.
Tell us who our guest is.
Oh, yes. It's awesome. This is, we've gotten our Gurmi fanboy moments out of the way before recording. But folks, it is a singular pleasure to let me just lead up to this. Our guest host for 20 Minutes With is someone who is described by Cory Doctorow as the podcast SF doyen, which, if you don't know what that means, it doesn't matter, but it sounds kick-ass, doesn't it? It's fabulous. Author of the Afterlife series and Marco and the Red Granny, Playing for Keeps, and Her Side, which is a story that also includes, she did with J.R. Blackwell, gorgeous photography from J.R. Blackwell, has written for role-playing games, founded the frickin' Parsecs, yo, is editor for Escape Pod, editor for Angry Robot Books World Builder Project, recently nominated for the John W. Campbell Award, has a book coming out from Orbit Books called The Shambling Guide to New York City, and produces and is the host of I Should Be Writing. Ladies and gentlemen, we are singularly pleased to have Mer Lafferty on the Skype line. Mer, thank you so much for taking time to be on the show.
Golly, when you say it like that, it sounds impressive.
it's one of my gifts. It's my superpower. If I ever had one, it would be.
It's very formidable. But no, thank you. I'm excited to be here.
So are we. Let's roll right into this. We got 20 minutes on the clock. Let's not waste it. Mer, one of the things that strikes me continually, especially when I listen to I Should Be Writing. But also your interviews and your general presence in the community is not only the depth of knowledge, but the honesty with which you present yourself, your life, your work, your craft. And one thing that anyone that knows you is aware of is that you deal with depression on a fairly daily basis. Is that correct?
I'm treated with medication now, but yeah, it's always lurking there. I know if I ever slip up on the medication that I can feel it the next week.
Sure, sure.
So yeah, it's not a battle every day, but I know it's always there.
Well, I know several people in the writing community and in my own circle of friends that deal with depression, and especially people who are motivated or driven to express creatively. Sometimes they deal with that, and it's a crippling handicap to that expression. And I wanted to ask you, how do you deal with that and write with that depression being a part of your background at all times?
Well, like I said, I am on medication. I think when I first got on medication, got diagnosed back in 2004, I think. Of course, it was 2004. Yes, because I was really worried that I would be. I'd heard about the whole Prozac thing of like it makes you feel happy, but you feel nothing else. You have no sex drive. You're unhappy. You have no creative drive. You're just sitting there happy all the time. And I was kind of worried about that. But you know, that's not the medication I'm taking. And my doctor said, you know what, it's going to take about 3 weeks to take hold, and you may not even notice it. But I had a patient who, when I gave it to him, he came back and he said, it's not working, doc. And she's like, okay, what do you do? What'd you do last week? And he said, oh, I cleaned my garage. I did this. I did that. And she's like, yeah, it's working. Yeah. And so, you know, what treatment gave me was, I started getting treatment around the time that I discovered what podcasting was, because podcasting began in August of 2004.
Sure.
And I got treatment in fall of 2004 and launched my first podcast in December. And so it's when I forget medication, which is usually when I'm traveling and like my routine is off, I start feeling it the next week, and it's really hard to keep going. And I know that's just a basic, of course, everybody assumes that. And I see some people who know what they're dealing with and manage to like get a rigid schedule in their lives and make that be the driving force. And I really admire that. But for me, it's tough. It's really tough when something is making my mind either go into overdrive or sapping all my energy. And which is why I'm glad I'm on medication, because it really hasn't colored my life in any way, except for the fact that I am productive.
Okay.
So I don't feel sad every day. I just know that it's there because I have to take my medication. And, but you know, at the times that it does hit, it's hard to keep going. 'Cause you know, I don't get sad and cry all day. I just feel tired. I want to take a nap all the time.
Yeah, sure.
And not be productive. I want to sleep.
Do you find that your writing changes between when you're on and you're on your meds and everything's great versus, you know, those weeks that you do kind of?
No, I don't think so. What changes is my habits. So I may not write, but I just try to keep in mind that, you know, writing often comes from the what Stephen King says of the boys in the basement, or you want to talk about the pretty muse, or I just like to think of my subconscious as, you know, like a pot bubbling in the background. Like, I don't need to take care of it. It's just doing its thing over there. Someday the soup will be done and I'll be able to deal with it. But I remember when I went to Bible Paradise in 2006, which is a week-long science fiction workshop. And Cory Doctorow was my instructor, and he said, you know, you have good days and you have bad days. You have days where you think, I'm writing complete shit. And you have days where you're like, I'm awesome. And then when you look at the entire manuscript, you can't pinpoint the days you felt like shit or the days you thought you wrote shit and the days you thought you wrote awesome. It just, and that's when I think you need to put your faith in what's really writing, where the ideas are coming from. You want to say it's your muse. You want to say it's your boys in the basement. You want to say it's your pot bubbling over. It's like, that's where it's coming from. You just put it out. And then later when you get some distance, you can look at it and say, you know what? It may not be that bad.
Yeah. Just trust it.
It's good advice.
That's
excellent advice. Which actually kind of branches into another point I wanted to ask you about. How do you foster your creativity? And by that, I mean, you speak of that sort of thing that you leave alone and have faith in that it will come through when you need it. Is there anything that you do in your life that you specifically have a discipline that keeps that pot full and encourages the creative juices to flow, as it were?
Oh yeah. It's writing. No, I don't mean that to sound all pithy. The thing is, I feel like going from the little pot metaphor to like, I like the whole Willy Wonka machine that makes nothing but foam and you never know what it does or why. I think about that. And it's like, this is a perpetual motion machine, except that it needs motion to keep going. And the fact that it's like, if I don't write, I may get stuck on one idea and I just obsess about that idea. If I write, then the machine starts going, and in the background, other ideas just start coming.
Right.
So if I don't write, I don't come up with new ideas. If I do write, then other ideas just keep growing up. And damn, I wish I remember who it was. It was somebody who's very active on Twitter. I want to say Tobias Bakel, maybe? Okay. Or maybe Paolo Bacigalupi. Anyway, somebody asked where you get your ideas. And the answer was, how can you stop yours from overwhelming you?
There you go.
It's like, how are you not overwhelmed with ideas? Because I am. Sure. And that's how I feel. And I think it's people who let that machine just kind of grind to a halt and then go, well, I obviously can't write because there are no ideas, but they don't realize that they have to give it a push.
Sure.
And then it will create things.
Or they're just coming into their craft. They're just starting to write out and they've begun writing a story or two and they haven't built that momentum.
Yeah. But, you know, I think some people are afraid when that starts to happen because they think, oh, God, I have another idea and I really want to write it. Does that mean what I'm writing is not good? Should I stop? No, it's those. You write it down and you keep going.
And let's not forget the now ubiquitous Mer Lafferty axiom. Don't be afraid to suck.
That's right.
Awesome.
Exactly. If you just write it out and don't be afraid to suck, then the next thing you write will be better. If you expect everything you write to be perfect, then you will be sorely disappointed, I promise. Because, you know, it's I'm pretty sure that what you write will never be as pure as your idea, no matter what stage in your career you are.
That's a good point.
And it's a sad fact, but as soon as you realize that's a fact, it'll give you the courage to just start writing.
We'll never be as good as we want to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that keeps us hungry.
Yes. And the pencil's sharp.
That's right.
Brian, did you have a question?
Yeah, this is a little bit more off topic, but one of the things that I noticed listening to the Heaven series and then Marco and the Red Granny is you have some really charming sarcasm in your character. And it's you know, it's one of those things that it makes you want to be best friends with this person. How much of that is
the coolest comment I've ever heard. Thank you. That made my day.
Charming sarcasm.
Good.
There you go.
So how much of that is you and how much of it is your sense of the character? Are you writing from how you would respond personally, or are you seeing the character as a totally separate entity and just making them pithy and witty?
I think some of my characters I do have them react the way that I would. And I've always felt that characterization is a weakness of mine, and I've been trying to work on it. But, you know, I try to do, every once in a while I do a mental exercise of asking like a basic question to all my characters and make sure that they all answer differently. Okay. Like it's hard to think of one on the fly, but just like something alarming happens. The mom's vase gets broken. And then you think about who answers how. Like one character is going to freak out. One character is going to try to hide it. One character is going to be like, screw it, that's an ugly vase. You know, I don't care. And so you need to make sure that I'm going to throw a question at my characters and hope that they all answer differently. But honestly, yeah, I often create at least one character to react to a situation the way I would, or at least the way I wish I would, because, you know, my characters are braver than me.
Right.
We'll be back with more of our conversation with Mer Lafferty after this brief promotional break.
The unknown.
Mystery.
Space.
Science.
Have fun.
Adventure.
Suspense.
Fantasy.
Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror.
The Journey Into podcast features replays of old radio shows like X-1, Escape, Suspense, Lights Out, and many more. Also, about once a month, I sure am trying, it will also feature full cast readings of new and classic stories, as well as new flash fiction. Think of it as a variety pack of audio fiction. It's a happy meal for your ears, or if you don't like happy meals, it's like the toy chest you used to dive into when you went to the dentist as a kid. Come check it out at journeyintopodcast.blogspot.com. So come with me and let's journey into space or into adventure. or into fear, or into mystery, or into the unknown, or into
Now, let's get back to 20 Minutes with Mer Lafferty.
You may have just touched on this. One of the questions that we wanted to ask was, what are you working on right now in terms of improving your craft? Is it your character work, your characterization, or are there other things that you're specifically paying attention to when you sit down to the writer's table to focus on and refine in your own process?
Oh boy. I'm currently working on the most ambitious thing I've ever undertaken, and it's scaring me, and I'm trying not to psych myself out, because once I realize I say I'm taking on the most ambitious thing, it's already psyching myself out.
Yeah.
But I it's a good question, because I am in an MFA program right now, and so I'm trying to write this novel in this MFA program so I can have professional authors' opinions, and I can have the opinions of my peers, and I'm focusing on two major things with this story, which is a plot that's more epic than linear. Basically, I want to look at it at a situation from lots of different points of view, and lots of different points of view that may be gray instead of black and white.
Okay.
And not just, oh, this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then the heroes won, and hooray! But, you know, oh, here's some flashback, and here's one person's point of view, and here's somebody else's point of view that you didn't expect to hear from. And so I'm basically studying different plot interweaving techniques, like George R. R. Martin's Song of Ice and Fire series, and I'm currently reading 1Q84 by Murakami. I can't remember the exact pronunciation of his first name, but the last name is Murakami. It's a Japanese book.
We forgive you.
And thank you. But I'm also looking at my characterization, and I realize I have a bad habit of making an every man or every woman character and having shit happen to them, and then they react. And that's weak writing. And so it's like I started with two character viewpoints, and I workshopped it last January, and everybody was crazy about the viewpoint that was not the everyman. They were crazy about her. They wanted to know more about her. What is she doing? Why is she doing it? I want to know more. And like what I thought was my main character, yeah, they talked about her general plot line, but they were not crazy about her. And I realized she was my every man character that shit happens to, and that needed to change. And so I am focusing on making her a more dynamic character who makes decisions and makes bad decisions, because that's, you know, that's what fiction's all about, is making bad decisions.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you're trying to make her more interesting and someone to root for, as well as my other character who's not quite so every man or every woman.
Cool. One other question that I've actually been asking a lot of people, and I'm intrigued by the various responses I'm getting from it, is why do you write speculative fiction? And by that I mean, Murray, you've got the chops to write anywhere. I mean, you could be a literary fictionist and go out in that direction. What is it about genre writing that has so captured your attention that pretty much your entire body of work so far has been in some genre-esque, speculative-ary, I'm making shit up as I go here, format, and appears to continue to draw your attention and keep you going? What is it that captures your mind that way?
You know, no one's ever asked me that question before, but I just realized the answer.
Ho ho.
I have always been a very avid reader, and I've been, as I have a young daughter, a 9-year-old. And so I've been reading some of the books that I read as a child with her, or just, you know, because reading out loud is not as fast as a hungry child burning through a book, seeing her read through them, like the Ramona series or the Anastasia Krupnik series. And those are all real life series about girls, and they're funny, and they're whimsical, and they're totally real life, and I remember loving them. But I never wanted to be a writer until I started reading Madeline L'Engle and Robin McKinley. until I started reading the fantasy and the science fiction and the, oh my God, what is possible? Anything is possible when I write it down. Holy shit. I mean, yeah, Ramona's a great story. She's fun. And I would love to write a character with that much whimsy and likability, but I didn't care about writing until I thought I saw what you could write. When I, you know, read Winkle in Time and The Hero in the Crown and the Dragonflight series or Dragon Riders of Pern series. And
so the heroes in those...
That made me hungry.
Okay. The heroes in those stories, the heroism of those stories captured your attention more so than in other books that you were reading.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It's the heroism. The other stories were really good, and I reread them many times, but it was the story of the everyday life. And I like reading about good everyday life stories. I've enjoyed Barbara Kingsolver. I've enjoyed some memoirs, especially Ruth Reichel, I can't remember, the food editor. She writes brilliant memoirs. They're hysterical and really awesome if you like food. But it's like, if I think about writing a story without a speculative element, I'm immediately bored. I just, for some reason, I can't think of a story that would be interesting. I know it's possible. I just can't think of it.
What about other genres like crime or psychological horror, you know, not necessarily supernatural horror?
I feel like I've not read enough in those genres to be attracted to writing in it.
Okay.
I don't know enough. In Her Side is actually not technically speculative. It's basically about a young woman and how she turns into a serial killer.
Okay.
But it's her origin story, and there's a little bit of madness in there, but not... There's no magic elements. There's no scientific elements. There's no weird elements. It's just how a young girl gets really messed up. And that I took a lot of chances with that one. And I've been told by people who've worked with kids who have some of the problems that my main character had that I hit it. I got it spot on, which is gratifying and a little scary. But that's... Even though it's got some horror elements, there are no speculative, magical, science fiction, any sort of those elements. So that's probably the closest I've gotten.
Okay. Well, you could argue that those sections of madness where reality unhinges a little bit, that's sort of the threshold of the speculative zone.
Sure. You don't know what's real.
Sure.
I mean, Joe Walton has her many nominated book, among others, nominated for Nebula and Hugo, I think. And that one is, it reads more like a memoir. And the main character may or may not have actual fantasy elements. And it's never really clear. So it could be the memoir of a slightly disturbed girl, or it could be a fantasy book. Now, considering it's nominated for the Hugo and the Nebula, they're saying fantasy, so
yeah.
That works. But, you know, it also has some little bits of, wait, is she just saying that, or is that really happening? We're not sure.
Which is a wonderful way to draw in the reader to participate in whatever's happening on the page.
Yeah. It's the whole unreliable narrator thing, and it's hard to write, and it's really awesome when it's done well.
Yeah, well... Hugo and Nebula, apparently she has achieved.
She has.
Awesome.
And she won the Campbell Award too. So she's really all over the place. Go Joe Walton.
Yay. we'll include her name in the liner notes. We'll get her webpage right up there.
Good.
Awesome. One last question because the time is ticking down. Actually, Brian, did you have another question? I don't want to hog all of the 20 minutes here.
Oh, no, that's fine. The only one that I had to do with main characters, and it's probably going to be a very quick one, so I'll shove it in real fast.
Okay, go for it.
Like Dave said, I'm fairly new to the whole podcasting thing, so I feel like I'm speed dating. Because every week I'm taking on somebody new, and then, you know, digesting as much as I possibly can. So I've only heard a few things of yours, but it does seem, at least in the two or three that I've listened to, that your main character always has, they start off with they're a little bit less than perfect and a little bit less than heroic. So how important is it to you when you're crafting a main character to stay away from the heroic, you know, good boy or good girl kind of cast that sometimes we see in a lot of flat fiction? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. I think the most boring superhero is Superman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because he really is the giant boy scout. And I think I haven't read a ton of Superman. I've read a whole lot about Superman. But I do, they added in the electricity weakness like later on because they realized he was just too strong. Is that right?
I am so out of that loop.
Okay. Cause I thought it basically it's like, oh, kryptonite is his only weakness. It's like, well, there's not a whole lot of kryptonite around.
They made him solar powered for
right.
Dark Knight Returns. I think when Batman took him out, he took him out by, I don't know, putting him under clouds or something.
Right. I need to reread that. I haven't read that in years, but anyway, it's the feeling of, you know, you want to start broken.
Mm-hmm.
And then gradually work toward either fixed or at least pasted together to work.
Right.
And perfection is boring. It's really, really boring. And some people start stories with perfection and then tear them down. And I sometimes find that depressing. And yeah. And I don't want to depress my readers. It's like there's a lot of children's literature that's really depressing. Black Beauty depressed the shit out of me.
Oh, God. Old Yeller.
Right.
I never read or saw Old Yeller. I just know Old Yeller. But I remember Black Beauty. Black Beauty ends well, but it's basically like Happy Horse beat the horse for about 200 pages. Happy Horse. It's not cool. And I prefer to start broken and then maybe break them down a little bit more, but then start to build up.
There you go.
And where that comes from is, you know, you see so many characters that you start reading it and you go, I see all of these great qualities in me. I want to be this person. And then, you know, in really good three-dimensional characters, you don't start off that way. It's, wow, I'm glad I'm not this person. And then by the end, it's, oh my God, this person is so much stronger than me.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to throw that in because I think that a lot of people struggle with that concept.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Yep. Well, guys, I hate to say it, but the clock has ticked down, and we need to wrap this up. Mer, thank you so much. It kind of feels like you slowed down to 20 miles an hour, and we're kind of running alongside, saying, "Mer, can we have a couple of questions?" So we were very, very grateful that you took the time to let us ask a few questions and share so generously of your insights. We're much obliged.
Absolutely.
No, it was a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Brian, anything else before we close this baby down?
No, just it was very nice to have you on, and I'm super, super excited, and I'm still having my little moment of starstruckness.
He's so. Doing it quietly in the corner. And that's we all learned a new
that
word.
That sounds really bad.
Well, Mer's got a pot of bubbling stuff in the corner.
That's true.
Right, yeah.
So it's okay. Everybody's got their shit in the corner. And that's fine. Right. That's fine. We're good.
Hey, I tell people it's okay to suck. You know how many times people have taken that to places I didn't want to go?
Yeah, between that and Learn to Love the Whip and all of the other things that are coming out.
Yeah, we had Pip Ballantyne.
Please establish a safe word. It's like people take that a weird place. I don't know why.
Banana,
yes. Thank you, Sigmund Freud. Awesome. Okay, so yeah, we're going to have to add Don't Be Afraid to Suck to our Learn to Love the Whip and other catchphrases going on the Roundtable Podcast t-shirt. Awesome.
Can we make something out of the safe word thing? Because I'd really like to do that.
Yes.
I don't know if I can put that in my podcast because it's clean, so I have to put it in yours.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes. We'll bracket that nicely. Yes.
All right.
Awesome. Gang, thanks so much for joining us, for tuning in. Tune in a couple of days, in a few days. We'll have Murr's workshop episode where she workshops a story with our guest writer. Until then, if you're having a fabulous time, please consider swinging out to iTunes and dropping a review. You can also go out to our website and leave a comment on the post, or drop us a line at thetable@roundtablepodcast.com. Thanks so much for joining us. Remember, gang, ideas are cheap. The difference between a writer and a dreamer is the person that sits down and writes it out. Brian, what do we say?
Go write.
Go write. Absolutely. Take care, guys. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This episode is copyrighted 2012 by the Roundtable Podcast and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share-alike license. That means don't sell it, but you can share it all you like. And you can even use pieces of it in your own derivative work, as long as you attribute us as the source and release the work under the same licensing terms. Theme music composed and performed by the talented Hepcats of Brotown, Gary Gold, David LaBruyere, Billy Nobel, and Matt O'Donnell. If you'd like to be a guest writer or guest host, or learn more about the Roundtable Podcast, please visit our website at www.roundtablepodcast.com or visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/roundtablepodcast. Our Twitter tag is @writerspodcast, or just send us an email at thetable@roundtablepodcast.com. Thanks for listening.